Awesome. Thank you all for joining. This is the Riffing and Ranting Show. I'm your host, Carter, host of That's Interesting.
I'm Mr. Quinn, the cameraman.
I'm Brett. I'm just a guy.
And today we have a very special guest. We have Kyle, the host of Geography King, here with us today to talk about his channel, and we're super excited. As usual, feel free to ask any questions in the chat. And follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever your go-to is. Leave us a rating and review.
Yeah, support the show.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining us, Kyle. And to get started, you've been doing this for a few years now. What inspired you to get on YouTube and start your channel? And
Yeah, guys, again, thank you for having me on. I've been doing this for, it'll be 7 years in March, so it's something I've been doing for quite a while. The first 2 years got off to a real slow start, but
yeah,
what happened, I just got laid off from my job in 2016. Couldn't really find much working for me, so I was like, well, just see if I can put my skills of geography to use, maybe talk about road tripping. That's kind of how things started, just about road tripping, and yeah, that's kind of took off from there.
Yeah. So, was there anything in particular that really like kicked your channel off and got it growing? You said the first 2 years were pretty slow. It was a pretty similar situation for me. Those like early years, not a whole lot of people were watching.
Yeah, I think for me, it was when I switched from primarily road trip content to geography. So the channel was always called Geography King, but the original intent was travel info from a geography nerd. But when I switched more to just geography videos, it started to take off. And then COVID, people were sitting down doing nothing, so more people were watching the videos then, and gained a lot of viewers in 2020 as well.
What was like the video or like the series that you did that really, I guess, quote it, like, I don't know how to put it other than like, what, that was your big break where you sort of blew up in a sense?
It was the one that's called the 16 Oddities of U.S. Geography. Because at that time, most of my videos got maybe a few thousand views, maybe just a few hundred views. But then that one, I have no idea how, I don't know how any of it works, but before I knew it, had 500,000, and I think now it has 3 million views. But that was the one that really brought people to the channel. And kind of when I, at the same time, things were switching from travel and road tripping to just geography in general.
That's awesome.
Did you have any education or experience with geography like earlier in your life, or how did this like interest start, I guess?
I started, I went to college to study geography. I didn't know I could even study geography in college till I got there. I didn't realize it was even something that was a field, but then I got into it while I was there, then kept going. I specialized in climatology and physical geography, and then moved on to graduate school at the University of South Carolina and kind of stuck with climatology and physical geography there.
Awesome. So it's always been something you've been passionate about. And
yeah, I've always just been reading maps and stuff since I was a kid. So it was always something that just a passion for me. So for me to study it in school was great, because I was going to go in studying astronomy. That's what I was really into, but then I was not that good at math. So I was glad I was able to find geography to my true passion for at school.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And road tripping, how it seems like you've done a lot of travel across the U.S. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Like, what are some trips that have been really meaningful to you?
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to just always have a job where I could take off for a month. Hey, I'm leaving for a month. So that's really been a big part of it. But it started when one of our friends, we were in California, one of our friends moved to Detroit. And so we'll go out and visit them. And that kind of took off from there. We drove out there. And when I went from California to South Carolina, I made it a big road trip. And just being from the West Coast, living on the East Coast, I just made it a deal each year to do that trip. And then once YouTube became a thing, I'm just doing this, so I have a little more free time to travel some more. So I've been seeing a lot more of the roads since, you know, post COVID.
Are you still out in California now or no?
No, I'm in Tennessee right now.
Okay.
I was here for 16 years and I was in South Carolina before that, but yeah, so I've been in the South for a while. I have a kind of an accent by now. I've lived here so long. Yeah, so I'm not a recent transplant though.
Okay, yeah, we're, I guess my family would be considered a little bit more of a recent transplant, but I know Carter and Quinn and I are all from they're from the East Coast originally, but we were all in California in the same period of time. Were you in NorCal or SoCal?
No, I was right in the middle in Visalia in the valley near Fresno.
Yeah,
a little different experience than most of the other people on the coast. But where were you guys at?
We were down near, Quinn and I were down near Santa Barbara.
Brad's
the area.
Yeah, I lived in the East Bay. I don't know how familiar you are with the Bay. And then I used to go up to Redding, Shasta, and Crescent City a lot.
Yeah, my dad's family is more up there. Redding, Yuba City, Colusa. That was their kind of stomping ground. So where are you guys at now?
I'm out in Minnesota right now, but I'm probably going to move into Pittsburgh within like the next year probably.
All right, that's cool.
College.
I'm in Chicago now.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm in Arizona right now for school.
Oh, sorry. I'm studying geography. Yeah, it's an awesome major. I mean, it's I went into college also like planning on studying political science or international studies actually, but then I didn't have to declare for a while. And I found that I was just taking a whole bunch of geography classes because it's what interested me. It just like it worked well enough where it was like, this just applies to a range of so many different things. And it's been, I haven't looked back, you know, it's been such a great field of study, I think.
Yeah, and that's one thing I learned is that you can just, whatever you're base interest in, there's always a geographic component to it. So I mean, you can study anything and make it just the spatial distribution of it. So that's kind of the same thing for me. I was in college while I realized that, because I, you know, like I said, went in doing other stuff, switched after my second year.
Yeah and it's like, I don't know, people will say like, oh, it's just looking at maps, but it's like, I don't know, I always pitch it to people as like it's a foundation for so much. It's like understanding the setting of anything you want to study or you're interested in. It provides you with so much of a strong background, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I would have done more GIS though. I didn't, when I was in college, it was the late 90s and it was GIS was kind of a newer thing. So I did the basic stuff, but I mean, obviously since I left school, it was like, I think it was ARC 9. I think it was the new one.
Yeah. GIS is tough. It's like, it's really cool, but it's also, I've found it to be really tedious. But it is also like, it's very technical. But it's definitely like a really useful tool. And that's, I think, where most of the jobs are, other than what you and I are doing.
But yeah, you gotta have that technical aspect for sure.
Yeah. Well, because it's like basically any field like needs people who know GIS pretty much. So geography majors or people who are pretty familiar with GIS are pretty employable from what I've seen, at least across a lot of different areas.
Yeah, I think one issue is that a lot of people they see you know geography or that's what you've studied and they think, oh wow, I don't need someone that knows the capital of Kansas. That's not going to help me out. So a lot of people think it's just trivia.
Right.
If you can get through the door, like what you actually know, how geography trained you and what skills you've learned from it, I think that goes pretty far once you're able to get into the door. But I think a lot of people just see geography and like, oh, you know, I don't need that.
Yeah.
So are you at University of Minnesota?
No, I'm at a smaller school, but I'm in the Twin Cities.
Are you University of St. Thomas?
No, I'm at, do you know McAllister?
No.
It's pretty close to St. Thomas.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I know that when I was in grad school, there was a student who went to St. Thomas for their undergrad, so I'm not sure what schools up there have geography or not.
Yeah, I went to a geography conference at St. Thomas, actually, last year. But there's definitely some cool geography programs out there in the Midwest.
Yeah, because when I was at South Carolina, that was one of the top schools, and then we would do these, you know, the annual geography bowl competition, and the South Carolina, we were always one of the top teams. But it was a lot of the Midwestern schools were some of the good ones as well. Illinois, Wisconsin were some of the top performers there.
Yeah, totally.
Have you done the AAG conferences?
I haven't. The American Association. No, yeah, I haven't done their stuff. I did. The one I did was Midwest Undergraduate Geography Seminar, MUGS.
Okay.
I just went to it. I didn't present anything, but it was a cool experience for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I did that Geography Bowl, and they paid for me to go to conferences. That was kind of my way to get free trips without having to actually show anything. No posters or no presentations. I just compete in this quiz bowl.
That's awesome.
You said you're moving to Pittsburgh next year?
Yeah, so I'm trying to do some road tripping for a few months. Visit a lot of the states that I haven't covered yet, and then probably around August, move to Pittsburgh, and I'm thinking of going full time with the channel, and we'll see where that goes. But yeah, I mean, that's where I used to live when we were out in Pennsylvania. I still have some family out there. But I like the city a lot.
Yeah, I do too. I've spent days there, not really, you know, extended time, but I've always liked it there. And when I was there last time, I just randomly ran into a friend of mine from high school who has a board game shop there. I thought that was pretty weird, but
I think I watched that video. You were up in Squirrel Hill, right?
Yeah, it's the Games Unlimited on Squirrel Hill. I walked in, like, wait a minute. I
remember that's Kyle. Neighborhood we lived in when we were up there.
So that was just a small world kind of thing there. But yeah, I always liked Pittsburgh. I like the hilly nature. So when you walk around, it's got a real, I mean, you're burning some calories. You're really staying in shape walking around town there.
Yeah. And it's just like, it makes for some real beautiful views with all the like hills and gullies and the houses kind of like perched on the side of the cliffs. Yeah,
it's always cloudy though, isn't it? Isn't one of the cloudiest cities in the country?
It definitely gets a good bit of rain too. That sounds about right. But the winters definitely aren't as long as up here in Minnesota.
I mean, you've experienced cold in Pennsylvania, but now you're like, well, take it up a notch and you go to Minnesota. Chicago too. Chicago doesn't mess around with winter.
Yeah, definitely not.
I'm content with being in Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona's winters are rather nice.
It's always just
4 months, barely any snow, but still not like freezing cold.
Where are you at in Arizona?
I'm near Flagstaff, like a half hour east.
Oh, okay.
So Flagstaff gets a good amount of snow.
Or east of Winslow? What's that? Where are you at?
Yeah, roughly in the Winslow. I mean, yeah, the closest town to me is Winslow.
All right, you're out there in the middle of nowhere, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too bad, so it works out.
I drive by there a lot. I take I-40 across the U.S. a lot, so I'm probably eating at every fast food joint in Winslow and Holbrook at some point in my life.
Yeah, it's Winslow definitely feels like a spot in the road sometimes, but I mean, you're not that far from Flag, so it's not terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a good town.
So,
how often do you come through here?
Almost every year. That's probably the one route I take the most. So I'll take different routes, but I'm on I-40 the most. So I'll I was probably on it earlier this year at some point, and I'll probably be on it again in a couple of months.
Do you ever take like 80 or anything, or like go a little bit further north through like Salt Lake City or anything?
Yeah, I've done all the routes at some point, but my next trip is going to be in the winter. So with winter trips, I tend to avoid going over the Rockies, like the Northern Rockies, at least. I try to stay south. So I'll be on I-40, but I'll do I-80 or 90 even if it's the summer or different times of year. And some of my road trips lately have been north-south. So I've been going up to Michigan and Canada and Maine. So it's been not so much east-west the past year.
Yeah, what I can't remember. I'm not as familiar with the East Coast. Like, what routes would you take to get up to Maine and some of those areas?
Depends on how you want to get there. You can go take I-90 from Chicago. You go through Cleveland and up to Buffalo. You can kind of follow the lakeshore there across the Adirondacks, or you can go all the way across Pennsylvania then up I-95. So if you want to see a little more nature, that upstate New York's real nice. That Western New England, but if you want to see the cities, you go 95.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up on the map right now just to look. I do a lot of road tripping as well, but mainly to the West Coast. So
yeah, that's what's really changed my knowledge. I mean, I learned so much in school, but it was afterward when I was traveling and seeing these places firsthand where I really started to learn a lot more.
Yeah.
Do you ever take the train to get around? What were you saying, Cody?
No.
Oh, no, go for it.
Oh, I was going to ask, do you ever get around by like train or plane, or do you like mainly road trip?
I'll take trains only in town, like light rail. I've never cross country taking trains. I'll fly because we go overseas sometimes, but other times, I have time. I like to take the 3 days, 4 days camp along the way. We have a dog. It's fun to take the dog. And I like to stop and see different places along the way. But if it's more of a hurry, we'll certainly fly.
Okay.
But yeah, people have asked if I'm afraid to fly, like John Madden or something. But no, I just I have a little more free time. I'll take the road if I have it.
Yeah.
It's always so much more fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Quinn and I have done a lot. We did a lot of Amtrak when we were younger. And I think that's also like it's a really interesting experience because you can't really like get off and see as many places along the way. But it is a slower way to like just see the country go by.
Yeah, and it takes you some driving.
Yeah. It takes you to some places where like the roads don't really go. You're almost seeing just like a cross section of the landscape because you're not it's not everything's designed for like drivers and people to like pull over, and so it's a cool way to do it too. I think
you ever driven through South Dakota?
Yeah,
what's that?
The western part's nice. The eastern part's pretty boring though.
Oh yeah. Well, I just remember a few years ago when I did this road trip with my dad out to Ely, Minnesota. We along the road in South Dakota, there's like all those billboards for that one, that like Wall one drug. Tourist.
Wall drug.
Wall drug.
Yeah, wall drug.
It's a tourist trap for sure. It's kind of an interesting tourist trap though. It's just it's worth a stop. But yeah, there's definitely no shortage of billboards for it.
Oh yeah.
Probably half the economy of the state, Wall Drug.
That's so true.
Yeah, that's the gateway town to Badlands National Park. And
it's kind of
a small town. Most national parks have a cute little town there, but Wall Drug is just a giant indoor mall. It's made to look like it's Old West.
Yeah, with the like Jurassic Park, like animatronic in there and everything.
Yeah, it's worth a stop, but that's about it. A quick stop.
Yeah. Someone's asking if you've ever driven to like Canada, done some road trip in Rock.
I've driven across a lot of Canada, but never like the full west coast to east coast. I was just in Saskatchewan and Manitoba, parts of Ontario recently, but mainly to see Winnipeg and just some of the areas around there. And I've driven around Ontario and parts of the areas right near the Maine and Vermont border in Quebec, but that's about it. Never one long continuous Canadian trip, but, and nothing overseas in terms of road tripping.
But have you done any overseas travel?
Oh yeah. We were just in Morocco earlier this year, and we had a great time there taking the high speed. They have high speed rail. It's crazy that Morocco has that and we don't.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that was my first big international trip. We'd been to the Caribbean several times and to Mexico, but never overseas like that. Cause we were in Germany. My wife had some family business to take care of there. So, we're like, well, we're going to be, you know, overseas for personal things. These are somewhere in the general neighborhood we want to see. We're like, all right, let's go to Morocco. We took a little flight from Frankfurt to Marrakesh and spent a week there. It was great.
That's awesome. Where in Germany were you?
We were in Frankfurt, a suburb of Frankfurt. That's where my wife's got some, her dad's family is from there. So she was visiting some family.
Yeah. Quinn and I were near like Dusseldorf this summer.
Yeah, it's weird because the only experience I have with Germany is a suburb of Frankfurt, so it was just probably not the most authentic experience. But it was still pretty interesting because there was nobody there except for just old Germans. So it was kind of cool like that.
Mm-hmm.
You ever done any travel down to South America?
No, I would love to. That's I have a big trip coming up in January or February. I'm going to actually be in West Africa. And then,
after that,
I want to start South America. I speak French. I'm working on my French. So I want to hit these places while my French is at its game. And then once I visited some French speaking countries and work on my Spanish and then hit South America.
Yeah, totally. Where in West Africa are you going?
I'm going to be in Senegal and the Gambia.
Oh, awesome.
So not the time to be going to Mali or Burkina Faso, but I'm sticking to Senegal and Gambia. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm super excited. I've never been. Yeah, that's going to be my huge first adventure in terms of Morocco is a big adventure, but that's, I think Senegal, it'll up notch in terms of. Yeah, because I'm not doing just Dakar. I'll be in some small towns, some villages, places you have to reach by a canoe.
So wow.
Awesome. Yeah.
Sounds really cool.
I'm not really going to do much. I'm not going in for content. I'll take photos and just maybe it's a little bit of stock video. But I'm going there just to visit, and I'll probably make a video about it. But I'm not doing any kind of vlogging there. I just kind of cringe at the thought of doing travel vlogging.
Right, yeah.
Overseas.
You want to stick to geography, not to being a travel vlogger.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of cringy because like you go to places, and we were in Marrakesh, and we saw someone doing some really, you could tell it was an Instagram photo shoot. She was wearing like this. It was so cheesy. I'm like, man, you're...
Selfie sticks.
She probably has 38 followers on Instagram. She's over there doing...
Yeah.
Like these poses, like it was really cringy.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta be.
Oh, sorry.
No, wait a minute.
You weren't doing that, were you, Carter, when you were traveling?
No, so, yeah, so Quinn and I did an international trip in the summer. And so we would do a few, like, clips of, like, talking on site in different locations. But it was mostly, we'd mostly get like footage, like stock footage, and then also just do like research, talk to people, visit the museums and things like that. Just take down, get a lot of like observational stuff too. So if we were making, like, I made a video on Greenland recently based on our trip there. And it's just, you're able to like, if you've actually been to the place, you're able to like get a lot more, out of it, and I think speak more authoritatively on it. but not any like, yeah, not any just like out there with the selfie stick, you know?
Yeah, that's rough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, you know, the person doing that doesn't, they don't, I mean, they don't have the same level of care if they're even doing that, like in a historic quarter walking around with selfie sticks. Yeah. Just, oh, yeah. Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I
but
think
at the same time, the video is going to be better. You'll have better content if that's what you're going for. But I don't know. That's my secondary thing when I'm traveling, is thinking YouTube. I'm thinking just the visit first.
Right, right. And then afterwards, if you're making something, you think about, you know, think about what you've seen. And I don't know. Yeah, I think, like, I do wish a lot more people, when they're traveling, would spend some time actually, like, researching the place before they go there, like, trying to learn to, at least the basics on its history and culture and all of that.
Yeah, it almost feels like really disingenuous when you're only going there for, you know, in whatever sort of content capacity you're doing, whether it's YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and you're not really putting in the effort to do things outside of, you know, just content creation. Because then, yeah, you're just sort of losing the whole purpose of why you're there.
Yeah.
I kind of view my channel as a way to pay for me to travel, not so much, you know, travel to make content yeah. So I can afford to travel. That's completely how it is for me. But so I'm happy. I'm just going to kind of ride this as long as I can, you know, where I can make enough money to travel. But
yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. It's like, I think that's like the main thing I would ever want to spend money on, is being able to travel. And explore. So it's, you know, having something that sort of allows you to do that is like, you go for it, you know. It's like,
yeah, it won't last forever, so I'm trying to ride the wave as long as it's still there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, although something that I've noticed, at least a lot with geography and just more informational channels, is that their relevancy lasts so much longer on this platform than, you know, gaming YouTubers or people that just cry online. I don't know. I mean, you know, because it draws in a very consistent crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure your stuff's the same, but I mean, my views are mostly the old videos and have been up for years. That's where kind of, because they're still good. I mean, some stuff, like you were saying, gaming stuff, games 3 years old, no one's playing it anymore.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, or if you're a drama channel, you're just in a constant state of just, you know, finding something wrong in your life, whether there is something or not, and then complaining about it. Not saying that's everyone, but, you know, that's what it seems to be like, and that gets old pretty quick, too.
Yeah, there's a lot that's popping up. There's been some couple of reaction channels that have just been taking videos from, you know, geography and urban planning channels, basically just uploading their videos, just going, oh, yeah, that's cool. No real anything added to it, just kind of taking people's videos. It's crazy that YouTube didn't stop that at all.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the bigger controversies. I remember seeing a video somewhere of like some random, like some OG, comedy channel was doxxed by someone. I don't remember the entire details, but I mean, I know he was criticizing, I know there's been a bunch of people just criticizing some of these lazy reaction channels and streamers, and that's sort of been the hot button issue. So.
Yeah. I guess they're attributing anything.
Well, plus there's some straight up plagiarism too, that's not being enforced. Oh. I mean, there's been some just straight up script reading, just verbatim from some other channel that doesn't even get, you know, you don't get a strike for that. But if I play 5 seconds of some song, I'll get a strike for that.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, I don't know, like Kanye or Taylor Swift or something like that. I mean, you play like any song and it's just, you know, you're demonetized to the ground, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to do an hour-long street vlog walking down the street and somebody drives by with a song playing for 5 seconds, they'd monetize it for them, which is kind of ridiculous, but I don't see how some people are able to upload stuff, though. You see things with licensed music. I'm not sure how they were even able to upload it in the first place, but I guess there are workarounds.
Yeah, I have no idea. Because I know YouTube has these, like, they'll just, like, have things that will automatically find it. and strike you if you do.
Yeah,
that.
I got permission from an indie rock guy in Indianapolis. He's just a local guy, local label. Got his permission and email to use his music and everything. Tried to upload it, it's blocked. I was like, this guy's not even on a real label. I have his permission. It was cool, but somehow YouTube blocked it. I couldn't even upload it.
Well, and I don't know if you've had this problem, but I think YouTube is I'm kind of annoyed sometimes that they don't have some sort of real customer service thing for creators. Because if you have a problem, you're just talking to a bot.
It's frustrating.
And then there's nothing you can, I don't know if you could have a person that I can talk to that can actually explain to me what's going on. I had some problem maybe a year ago where YouTube just totally changed my monetization projection, I guess, for the previous month by a significant amount. They lowered it. And I was like, what happened? Where did all that go? So then I had to but then they're putting me on with a bot.
Yeah. Remember, are you on the partner program or no?
I mean, I think everyone's in the
partner. I think you kind of have to be.
Yeah, I know at a certain point they give you a human to talk to and not just AI.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do have access to a live person, but it maybe for what it was for you might have helped, but I think it's more for technical type things, not so much for, I don't know. I've never had to use it, but I think you can get in touch with somebody for technical type issues.
Yeah.
Well, that's frustrating.
I mean, it's nice not have a boss, but then it's also, I would like to know sometimes what's going on because you
can't figure it out.
Yeah. How bad has it been with just over the years with demonetization and all and just consistent issues? I mean, obviously with I guess with music and everything, that's one component of it. And we already touched on that. But what about have you had people, I know Carter's had this before, a couple of years ago, I think, but have you ever had people sort of take your scripts and sort of rewrite them and make their own video, or have you had people just do lazy reactions to? Have you had experienced any of that recently?
I don't know about a lazy reader of a script. I know there are plenty of channels that have done or at least a few that have done reaction videos of mine. They're usually foreign people doing ones about the US. So usually somebody from Britain or France or something about the top things in the US. It's always some big surprise to them. I haven't had any like for Carter, where it was somebody basically just reading off your stuff. I don't, as far as I know, I haven't, but there's so many channels, it's hard to keep up with any of them, all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never had, as far as I know, at least the reaction thing.
Well, didn't you have those from a bigger channel? I remember you texted me this a while ago. There was that one that you made this one video on it was on California, I think. And then someone basically just did the exact same video and it was on a bigger channel. I remember when that happened, which wasn't great.
Because obviously you're going to touch on similar, even the same topic sometimes, right? But there was one video that was a almost word for word remake, same thumbnail pretty much and everything by a much larger channel.
Wow.
So that type of thing that's only really happened to me, I'd say once or twice, but yeah, definitely. And there's not really anything you can do about it, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, there's been a problem on TikTok too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
For people that don't for YouTubers that don't have a TikTok account, there are people that have been taking the names of people on YouTube, and if you don't have your own TikTok, you can't challenge them to say they're trying to be you. So kind of dumb, but I happened to a few channels, so I actually went in and created a TikTok just to have it and not even actually use it.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, that's something I was wondering. Have either of you guys considered branching out to Instagram Reels or TikTok or anything like that, or mostly just sticking with YouTube?
I'm content with YouTube right now, but I mean, I wish there was a legitimate, like a better equal competitor. Because there's the Nebula thing, and I don't know, that's just not really my thing. But there's, I don't know, as far as Instagram Reels or TikTok, I'm not going to, me probably could be getting much into that. Probably not TikTok at all.
Yeah, like, at least for me, and probably, I mean, for a similar thing, we both do, like, longer form content, and I think it's really hard to translate that to those, like, 15-second clips, you know? It's like, if you leave, I always think about, like maybe it would get me some more, it would get the channel out there a little more, but it's so, I'd be leaving so much out that, I don't know, I think it would be sort of a, it would be a tough thing to transfer that to, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that type of content that we're doing isn't suited for shorts. It's almost like more of a trailer for a longer video as opposed to, I mean, what can you get out in a short? I've done a few shorts, but they're just kind of silly, not really, can't really do a real video with a short.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like most times I've seen sort of like geography YouTube shorts. And I don't watch much of that. I'm almost like, well, they're missing so much. It's like, I started off making shorter videos way back in the day, but I think they got longer as I went along just because I was like, I want to be telling as much of the whole story as I can. I don't want to be leaving stuff out if I can avoid it. And I think it's harder to do with those shorter form clips.
Yeah. I mean, you've got some hour long state videos. That's impressive, man. I know how long it takes to do a 20-minute one, so that's a lot of. I know how much has to go into those hour long ones.
It's a lot of work for sure. And I like originally like I was getting they were a bit shorter, but people were like, I want you to talk more. And I started testing out longer ones, and I noticed it wasn't affecting the viewership of them really at all. Like maybe they would start a little slower, but they'd continue growing more as they went along. Yeah. And so that, I don't know, that it makes me feel good. I think that at least people are willing to watch and that there is an audience for this more like these longer, more comprehensive things, than just this like quick, you know, 3-minute content.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, definitely. Those are definitely impressive because you get way more into history. I don't really get into history much on my channel, so you definitely cover, you know, way more bases in your state profile videos, because I mean, because a lot of it is history. I just never really touch much on it.
Yeah, and that's like it's probably a good third of my U.S. Explained videos. I sort of do like almost like a third physical geography, a third history, and the rest I talk about like cities, culture, and things like that. And so yeah, it totally ends up being like a pretty long profile. But your state profiles are great too. I love your city profiles also. You've got some good, really good stuff out there.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. I tried to do those right after I got back from visiting them, so it's kind of fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
You'll have plenty of that too once you get traveling more. You'll see somewhere, I'm sure, you'll be like, wow, this is way better than I was expecting. And that's something that would be great to share with people. Because that's, you know, traveling out there and seeing is where you'll really get your good info.
Totally. What are some, I'm curious what some places you visited that have really surprised you, in a positive way or a negative way or whatever, when you've been traveling.
Yeah. One of the more recent ones I would say is Cleveland. I was expecting it to be mostly dumpy and trashy, but I thought it was mostly pretty nice. I was really surprised at how little of the town was so trashy. There's some plenty rough areas in Cleveland, a lot of urban poverty, but it's a relatively small percentage of the city, much less than Detroit, certainly much less than Baltimore. So I was surprised with that, but I think Baltimore, on the other end, I was surprised at just how bad it was. Just the percentage of the city that was kind of run down and slum, it was probably worse than Detroit. I was quite surprised. I knew it wasn't going to be the you know, fanciest, best off city in America. But I was a little surprised at just how much of it was had seen many better days.
Right, and you don't see too much of that, at least on the East Coast, too, which I think is, which is surprising. I haven't. It's been a while since I've been to Baltimore, and yeah, I haven't spent much time in Cleveland either.
It's rough. It's rough. I'd say it's probably worse now than it was 15 years ago. It's yeah. It's rough. I mean, and most of the other cities that get a bad rap, I don't think are as bad, like Milwaukee or Indianapolis or Philadelphia. Yeah. I think those are not deserving of how bad a rap they often get, but I think Baltimore probably is worth its deserving of that bad rap.
Yeah.
What about cities?
It's pretty rough.
What about cities in California? Like, I mean, obviously, or in just the West Coast, because I know Portland, San Francisco, and LA get a pretty bad rap for a whole multitude of reasons.
Yeah, Portland is actually the city I'm the least familiar with. I rarely discuss it because I've only been there one time. It was like 20 years ago, so I really don't know much about Portland. But people I know that have been there recently tell me it's like the downtown is really rough. So it's kind of interesting how I think it's probably the only big city in the U.S. where the CBD is the, you know, the highest crime, poorest part of town. I think it's where you have a lot of the issues. I love San Francisco. I think just the reporting and just the coverage of it is really unfair. It's because most of San Francisco is pretty nice. It's not just expensive for the heck of it. It's mostly pretty nice. But the parts that are rough are gnarly, really bad. So I think this fun from a lot of creator that focus on just the tent cities. But I think the West Coast cities are pretty nice. There's some obviously plenty of rough areas in L.A. But growing up, you know, I'd always hear from the coast that, you know, Fresno is the worst city in the state. It's pretty gnarly, but I think Fresno is pretty comparable to a lot of cities in the South that are a similar size in terms of just kind of in terms of being run down, maybe high crime. But it's on a California standard, I think Fresno looks really bad. But in the South, it would be kind of, you know, average, on par with most other cities in that size range.
Yeah.
I don't like Las Vegas. I'm not a fan of Vegas. I just think it's too suburban, just too, I don't know, no soul to it.
Mm-hmm. A weird place.
That's funny.
Yeah. I mean, what I'd say about the West Coast cities too is it's like a lot of the problems are really like homelessness and cost of living, which is definitely a huge problem. But the physical like infrastructure, the city itself isn't really deteriorating much at all. And like, I like Portland a lot. And I've spent a good bit of time there, but you definitely do see like in more recent years, the homelessness has increased a lot. And I think that's been true across like even smaller cities in the West Coast too. Just has become really expensive just to live there.
The other thing with Portland too is I think the drug usage as well is also sort of been plaguing it as well as with San Francisco too. I mean, I was born in San Francisco and was raised very close to the city, and you know, it breaks my heart to see, you know, San Francisco. I mean, I know they've always had a homelessness issue, but just I think it, you know, it's not nearly as bad as, you know, people say that is true. But I mean, when it is bad, it's pretty heartbreaking to see. And then with Portland, it's sort of the same thing too. I've spent probably not as much time as you have, Carter, out there, but I've spent a good amount of time, and you know, it's sort of the same thing for me because Portland's a really, really nice place. And I mean, I remember going to Powell's Books in downtown, and you know, now I went back there about 3 or 4 years ago, right before COVID, and it had changed completely. So.
Well, COVID took its toll on, like, I think so many downtowns, just because there were just a lot less people actually working in those city offices. But, no, I totally agree. Like, for whatever reason, I think the media's picked, like, San Francisco and Chicago as its punching bags. And you go there, and it's, like, it's not anything like what people are saying.
Yeah, Chicago also gets it for the crime. And I was...
Yeah.
You know, I was in Chicago last year. I love it there. I can spend all day just walking around. But yeah, it's easy to focus on the negative things because it's just because I mean, just from a like from what we do, I don't know if you have any videos like the worst this, but those always get more views than the best of this. I mean, I've yeah. the best state capitals has half the views of the worst state capitals, and just more yeah. traction for the media, whether it's news or YouTube or whatever, when it's something that's bad.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, I try to stay away from that kind of thing. At least I try to, as much as I can, to present, like, you know, everything's got its positives and negatives, but I try to provide at least something of a more optimistic note about what I'm seeing, while also, you know, being honest about everything.
But yeah,
I mean, I've seen your like best and worst things, and I think you, I mean, you present them all very fairly too, but it's, yeah, that's kind of like what the algorithm wants to see, you know, is like people are definitely more drawn to that, like that, those types of things.
Yeah, I was about to say that people are like naturally drawn, either subconsciously or consciously, to more negative things at times, or tend to be, because that's why at least the news sometimes often, not always, but they often report on maybe more negative things, because they know that's what brings in the views or things like that.
Are you going to keep on posting at high rates, or when you start traveling, are you going to kind of slow down, or what? How are you going to be able to travel a lot and, you know, get yeah. a lot of content up?
Yeah, I imagine when I'm traveling, I'll sort of be posting at a similar rate as I am now, just because, I mean, because right now I'm in school, so I'm getting something out about like once a month. But then once I think it'll be a bit more frequent once I'm like off the road and like settled down doing this at least full time for as long as I'm going to be doing that. But yeah, how's that been for you? Like, what's your strategy when you're on the road?
Usually what I do is actually make a couple of videos before I leave and time release them while I'm out. Cause I don't really do a whole lot while I'm there to make it, because I don't want to have my whole editing rig. I use a desktop, so I don't have a good enough laptop for my editing software. So I like to have videos done before I leave, or I'll do a simple one like where I've been doing lately, asking people geography questions on the street, because I can edit those really easily without the software. So, but yeah, I don't make videos while on the road, but I haven't been on the road for like a month at a time in a long time. So if I were to go that long without of just traveling, I'd probably have to do something. I don't know, but
yeah, that's what I did when I studied abroad last year. And so I like had like three or four that I timed and just sort of got like one up a month. But so that's probably, I'll probably do that to an extent, but then also try to get some stuff coming out when I'm gone. Yeah, your man on the street ones are really cool. Like, I feel like with a lot of those, especially the, like, geography questions, they'll just purposefully pick, like, people who just don't know the answer or anything to try to, like...
Yeah. I've done several of those, and what I've found is that, you know, a lot of people don't get the questions right, but they're not funny in getting them wrong. So I think you really have to ask a ton of people to get enough material of funny people missing questions. Because you ask people 10 questions, they're going to get half of them wrong. But they'll be not like way wrong answers. They'll be kind of reasonable, you know, not the worstest stupid answers. But you do get some dumb people, but it's nowhere near the extent you see on those other ones that are just filtering out the dumb people.
Right. No, that's what I've appreciated about yours is like there are a lot of people who know a decent amount about geography and especially the places they live. And you're really seeing that in that.
But to be fair, though, I always ask, this will be for YouTube, it's geography questions. And then they're often like, oh, no, oh, no. And they walk away. So if I were to say, do you want to be on YouTube answering questions, I'd probably get more people that are just general. But when I say for geography questions, then some people that will say, yeah, they're likely to be people that know a little more anyway. Although there was this one guy, he just wanted to be on camera. It's pretty funny. He didn't know anything. He's like, get me on camera. I was like, all right, man, you're going to look pretty dumb. But And he did. Yeah, that was something I did to kind of, as a way to be able to have some kind of contact while I'm on a longer trip. But yeah, I'm not sure what the next one of those I'll do. Probably in a few weeks, somewhere south of here where it gets, you know, not so cold in December.
Yeah, that's been a more recent thing you've started, right?
It's just been for the past few months. I did it just a one-off thing here in Chattanooga, and it was a lot of fun. I was surprised at how well people did. I turned it into a thing, and each one I go to, somebody wins, and I'm going to bring them back in a few months after I've done eight, like a, you know, over Discord, do a like a Tournament of Champions Jeopardy type thing of the winners of the previous ones.
Yeah.
And I may or may not have a celebrity edition, and you may or may not get a call on.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Participate.
I would definitely be down.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I ask pretty tough questions too. I ask usually kind of a feeler question, like what states border the Great Lakes or the Gulf of Mexico, kind of get an idea of where they're at and then adjust from there. It's easier if they're missing them, or get more difficult if they're doing really well. Some people, man, I have to come up with some pretty difficult questions because they're doing really well.
Yeah, yeah. And you recently started like a California focus channel podcast, right? How's that been going for you?
It just started. I just posted the first video like maybe a week and a half ago. And I'm only going to post maybe once a month. And it's just going to be kind of commentary type videos about issues that are in the state that probably aren't of great interest outside of the state. I'm going to keep it small. I'm not even sure it's going to be monetized. It's just, you know, less than 1,000 subscribers. Just keep it kind of simple, but also not going to be a focus. I'm not going to have it take away from the main channel in terms of time. So just maybe once a month.
Gotcha. Just like more you wanted to have a bit more of like just California specific videos, but
I don't like the idea of having a second channel, but I didn't want to, you know, have a lot of these kind of weird detox. I'm going to have one about a potential new, just huge development outside of Fresno. They're talking about building like adding on a town of about 50,000 people adjacent to Fresno.
Oh, but wow.
Probably wouldn't be of much interest to people outside of California. So I want to, you know, have those kind of videos pop up in people's inboxes when it's just, you know, always about something kind of small time in California.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw, there was something about some developers were buying up a bunch of land in the Delta to try to build like a new city or something. And pretty controversial, but.
Yeah, that was, I'll be talking about that as well. And it was one thing that was interesting about that is they didn't know who it was. It was just people buying up all this land. How could you buy up all that land anonymously near an Air Force base? I don't see how that's even possible. Because if I buy something, it's on the, you know, online record the next day. John Smith bought this house.
Right, yeah. The
group is buying up massive acreage near an Air Force base. No one knows who they are. But yeah, we'll see what they do with it. I think a lot of it's pipe dream, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to build some utopia or something. It reminds me of like, you know, like California City out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like if you
got you with a dream and money, and that's about it.
Yeah, and then it doesn't actually fill up. You're kind of screwed because you've had this like half completed city.
Yeah. Have you been to California City?
I haven't. Yeah, I need to get out there at some point. I've like driven past it, I think, but
it really isn't worth it, honestly. But it is just kind of a trip to see all these streets that are just, you can tell is meant to be a subdivision, but it's just so dumb.
Yeah. No, I know people would just go out there and like drag race or just like
ride a bunch of motors. There's no shortage of that, yeah. But it's kind of weird because there is like an interior actual town, and it's like a regular, you know, town you would expect of 8,000 people, you know, businesses type thing, but it's just in this tiny center of this giant empty parking lot, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some weird stuff out there for sure.
But I think there's another there was somewhere else where they're talking about a big, somewhere in Texas, just a huge new from scratch development somewhere within an hour of Austin. I'm not sure exactly where it was, but so, yeah, I'm not sure if these are the billionaires that have woke up with a dream one day and they fund this thing or what, but yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if any of those things work out.
Yeah.
They either buy up subdivisions and try and make towns like that, or they buy up a lot of farmland in like the Midwest so they can get the tax break.
Yeah, that's one of the problems too, is farmers, you know, their kids don't want to work on the farm, so they sell it. And they can make way more money by selling it to a developer or having it chopped up into a couple hundred homes, but makes you wonder, you know, yeah, there's plenty of farmland. There's not like the space is being overused, but you just don't have as many people that want to continue farming. So I'm always, being from an agricultural area, I'm always curious about how that's going to work out.
And I know, like, especially in the Midwest, a lot of those farms are just getting bought up by these big, like, ag conglomerates. As, you know, the younger generations move into the city and stuff. But I think a lot of those larger farms are, like, super subsidized too. Like, monocultures, they're not as profitable as some of the smaller stuff. But how do you like keep that interest in like the next generation to, you know, stay on the farms? Or like, I don't know, it's kind of a tough situation.
Yeah,
you're in the business of breaking even too, which is the other thing,
right?
Yeah, it's, if you want to be small time farmer, it's hard work, long hours, and you're not going to get rich, but it's, you have to go back to people that would want to do that. So a lot of people aren't going to just sacrifice, you know, I'm going to work more, I'm going to work harder, but get paid less so I can do something as, you know, altruistic as farming. I don't think people are really going to be doing that. I think just corporate farming is almost kind of the way it's going. It almost kind of has to be that way, because who's going to grow it? I'm not growing my own crops. So it's just kind of... I don't know of a great solution for that.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Smaller farming is definitely the way it should go, probably, but it's not, it's hard. How do you move in your industry, right? It's like.
Yeah, I think we expect food to be so cheap. Like, we go to the store, we'll see an apple for, you know, a dollar. Oh my God, a dollar. But then, like, we'll pay $5 for a box of puffed up sugar cereal or something, but we just expect produce to be essentially free. I mean, we go buy bananas. How do bananas get to the U.S. right? And you can buy like 10 for 50 cents. How is that even possible?
Yeah, you've grown halfway around the world. So
I mean, like, we're like small time farmers back home, and I mean, we don't grow any produce, but we grow alfalfa to sell to some other ranches in my area. And I mean, even just that is a lot, and there's a lot more work into just even growing a simple crop like grass. So something that's often lost.
Yeah, I grew up in a big dairy area, since, you know, similar with dairy, it's just mass produced because it's a small time dairy. It's hard to make it just a small family operation.
Yeah. Well, and then California is one of the only places where you actually see like such a range of crops grown too. I mean, just because of like weather conditions and things like that.
Yeah,
Midwest, it stays not, three or four.
Yeah. At the Midwest, you grow a lot more of the hardy stuff that grows in the ground. But in terms of if it needs to be out, like, you know, the old fruits and nuts, like they say, that's. Even like in Florida, it's too hot in the summer. So the Florida strawberries and tomatoes are basically just during the winter, because a lot of those things are just so finicky. They don't like it hot either. And then like green leafy vegetables, it always has to be kind of cool for them. They can't be too hot, too cold. So I think a lot of plants just fare well where the weather is a little more predictable.
Yeah, you can just control the amount of water that's coming in and everything. Like, I know they're even growing rice up in parts of the Sacramento Valley.
Honestly, I don't know the whole deals with water, but I mean, a lot of crops need to be grown in California because, you know, the sunshine and soil, but rice doesn't, and rice uses so much water. I don't know. You can grow rice, I mean, all throughout the South, and it's plenty of water. I don't know why there's so much rice being grown in Northern California. I think it's kind of weird. But again, I don't know how it all works in terms of the business and water, but I mean, there isn't that much water. The rice takes a lot of it.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same thing with out here in Arizona. I was talking to, was at the feed store a few days ago, and talking with a guy over there, and he was telling me that Arizona, they grow a lot of alfalfa, which is a very water intensive crop, which is very interesting because Arizona historically doesn't get, you know, the most amount of water. And I guess supposedly the state leased a lot of land to the Saudis so they could grow alfalfa and then ship it back, because the Saudis won't grow it back in Saudi Arabia because they don't have the water either. So it's one of those things where it just doesn't make sense. Why would they grow it out here?
Yeah, anywhere. Yeah, I mean, Nestle, the water, I mean, the company Nestle has a water bottling thing in California, too. They're taking California mountain water to bottle it. I'm like, can you pick a worse spot to do that? Go anywhere else to bottle water. I mean, But Nestle has a lot of water rights in a lot of states, like Florida. They control a lot of the springs there. I'm not sure how all that stuff works either, but just all the sketchy side of business.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it probably is about water rights, because at least from what I know about California, is it's kind of like first come, first served. And so if you had the water rights originally, you might get it over like a town that developed later, you know. So that's why these bottling companies and things can have. I know like Arrowhead is getting a lot from California. Yeah.
It just seems silly. I mean, it makes sense for Iceland water, you know, those ones that come from England where there's rains all the time, but I think of better places than California to get your bottled water. But
Kyle, I was wondering, it seems like you're on a pretty consistent upload schedule. What's the weekly time commitment for making your videos like?
It really depends. A long time ago, I chose to not go on a schedule. I didn't want to say every Wednesday at noon. I just didn't want to put myself on that. So
right.
I sometimes have a video a week, sometimes two a week, sometimes one a week and a half, but it depends on mostly how much work goes into that one. So the state profile videos tend to be the ones that take the most effort, most time. And some other ones that don't require as much editing will be less time. But I would say overall, it's a full-time job between, you know, posting and just kind of the keeping up with just comments and emails and stuff like that. It's you know, it keeps you busy. It's not hard work, but it's a good, never measured it, but probably close to about a 40-hour a week type job.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you ever find yourself getting sort of burned out after maybe you've worked on like some longer ones or just had like more of a week with a lot of time commitment?
Yeah, there's certain videos where maybe I gave myself however many days to do it, but it took way more. It was way more involved. Or there have been times where I was halfway through a video and realized this is not going to work. This is not going to end up being good. I need to start over from something. So, or sometimes where I've almost done with the video and I'm like, well, this thing's gonna be 4 minutes long. I need to do something else. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's the same for you too. Certain videos just take way more time and effort than others. And
yeah,
there's really no correlation between the effort from our end and the views. It just, who knows? Sometimes the ones that didn't take much work get the most views, but
yeah.
I do get burned out a little bit though. I try to not overcommit. I was trying to overcommit with stuff before, but at this point, I'm just like, you know, I'm going to do it on my own terms. And I don't think it's hurt not scheduling at a specific time each week. I know that kind of pressure on me, I don't think would help. For some people, it probably helps, but not for me.
Yeah. Because I don't know, like, are the viewers really going to, like, memorize, like, your schedule? Like, it's, I don't know, they'll watch it when it comes out, I feel like.
Yeah, so I don't know any channel. Like, I know plenty of channels post at a schedule, but I couldn't tell you what any of them are. But I think for some people, it's good for them to have that structure. Like, it's that kind of having that deadline on themselves might help. But for me, I don't, that's not the kind of pressure I like. I'd like the idea of, like, okay, this didn't work out. I can post it tomorrow. It's okay.
But, have you done any sponsorships? Because I've done a few of those, and that kind of, like, they kind of want it up within the month. So that sort of gives me, like, a, at least it's been helpful during the, like, the college year where it's like, I got to get something up like this month. Otherwise I probably would not.
Yeah. I haven't done any sponsorships yet. I've reached out to people. I'm sure you're same as me. You get those stupid emails all the time.
Yeah. People,
the pyramid scheme people. I haven't really responded to any of those, but I've reached out to companies from my end of products and services I use and haven't gotten any bites back. But that's kind of my approach, is to endorse things that I use. Because, I mean, you've seen some of those ones they send us. Like, did you get the one for Raid Shadow Legends? Play my game for a half an hour. Like, why would I play your game for a half an hour on a geography channel?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, I at least go into it. Like, I get so many of those, and I'm only going to take the ones that I would actually like use the product and endorse my viewers. You know, I'm not trying to scam my fans. Like,
there's some weird ones, like those ones about China. You get those ones like, you can move your stuff to a server in China and we'll keep it separate from YouTube. I'm like, this sounds legal AF right here. So I'm not doing this.
Like, drinks or something. It's like,
it's definitely sad to see how how ethically and morally how low some creators go just with scamming their, you know, their fans, either they're convicted of it or allegedly they do. I mean, I know some of the big names were like, or that blonde kid is from Ohio. The like one of those two, I think they're like one of the Paul brothers, I think is their name. I don't know offhand, but then you have like other people that like that aren't as known, like that do rug pull crypto things. I mean, those are the big ones now, or all those crypto, like crypto bros that scam the hell out of people. So
yeah,
it's just sad to see how bad it gets.
Well, and there's like enough legitimate companies that are that sponsor people, you know.
Yeah,
it's like NAFTA. Like, I don't know why you'd stoop to just some like sketchy crypto scam or like weird game, mobile game or something. It's like,
yeah, I mean, I feel those things are almost like a pyramid scheme, because it's always like a broker for the company. It's not somebody from the company. So it's like, I represent X, Y, and Z. And so it's like a circle. People are getting kickbacks here. YouTube, I'm sure, gets a kickback from it. So I don't know, but I've kept a few, you know, the ones that seem sort of geography related, kind of looked into those, but haven't done any of them yet. But the ones that are not even geography related, I just delete.
Yeah.
Yeah, those loot box games. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah, I remember, I think they, like, the court or someone ruled that, like, those loot boxes and everything that they you'd see like in bigger games like Call of Duty, they ruled them as like they fell under the guidelines of like gambling, so they all these companies had to take them out of all their games, which was smart.
I think the EU was the one who said that, and because I don't think the US, I don't think there was really anything in the courts, but the EU court said it has to be labeled for adults or something with this gambling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the European Union was definitely right, and that's a smart thing to do. Because it got bad at one point a few years ago with some games, like back in 2015, 16, that rough era. Because I also remember there was like that weird like loot box online thing that people would like pay into, and like you could win like a house or an AirPods or something like that. That was another bad one too. Not that wasn't in a game, but that was just a full on just gambling website, it seemed like.
Yeah, I was gonna do things like give away prizes for the geography quizzes, but I don't think you can even do that. I think that's against the guidelines to do something like prize giveaways, even. Or you have to do something, register it differently, or I don't know. But they seem like they allow a lot of things it shouldn't be allowing, and then they kind of put a roadblock on things that not that big of a deal, but whatever.
Yeah, because I feel like there are a lot of people who do like prize giveaways and things like that, and I hadn't even thought about that.
I know that it's been very gray area, Shi, because like there was this whole scandal with like a Family Channel a few years ago, I think, and they were trying to do a prize like a car, and they never paid out. So I think that's where the issue came from.
Yeah, it's also all kinds of gray area stuff with them. Like, are there kids in your video? So does that mean a kid in the back of a photo, or is like a? I mean, so there's all kinds of gray area like that, so I just try to avoid any kind of stuff like where it might be an issue to have a giveaway, or I'm just kind of generally going to stay away from it, but unless there's better guidance on it.
Yeah, hopefully there will, because I think for the most part it's not like a bad thing to do. It's actually a really great way to interact with your community. It's just the, like with everything, it just takes a few bad apples to spoil a good time.
But we'll see. I might do it anyway. Might just not even care. But... I saw after one of your most recent videos, Carter, you talked about how you're going to just take a lot of time off for a road trip. Have you kind of planned out what you want to do, where you want to go?
Yeah. So I'm planning out the route. I'm trying to hit a lot of the Western states, because that's most of what I have left to do for the U.S. Explained, because it kind of moves east-west. So I'm planning sort of a few months, which will be a while, but sort of drive around, take my time, like visit some friends along the way. And then, yeah, these guys. And then hit the territories too, which will be really exciting. And we'll see how I go about that. But yeah, mostly like Western states and Midwestern.
That's cool. Did you do camping, or are you going to be, how are you going to be staying?
I'm trying to mostly camp or like stay with friends, and then I'll probably get hotels or something if I'm in a city where I like don't know anybody. But yeah, I'm really going to try to camp where I can, which is, there's a lot of great like state parks and national parks and monuments and all that, out in the West. So.
Yeah, that makes road tripping a lot cheaper too. I mean, cause I've noticed in the past couple of years, just how much a regular old hotel room costs, like a Holiday Inn Express might cost you $200 now. So
yeah. Because I was going to say, like, these flights to, like, if I'm going out to, like, Guam or whatever, those flights are going to be pricey, too. Because I got
a flight to Guam is probably not cheap.
So
you have to fly to Hawaii first, I guess, and then from there to Guam, or?
Yeah, Honolulu, they have a flight. United has a flight from Honolulu to Guam. It's, like, 10 hours. I mean, it's essentially flying internationally, even though technically it's domestic, but. You know,
So I'm gonna try to be like as low budget as I can when I'm down in like the lower 48, and then just save the money for flights for where I have to.
Yeah, it's actually for us, it's gotten to the point where, I mean, our trip to Morocco was cheaper than if we would have went to Disney World in Orlando. It was crazy, even with the flights, and our flights to Germany were cheap, and this trip to Senegal, I mean, you wouldn't expect Senegal to be expensive, but it's cheaper to go there even with flights than it is to do a week in Santa Fe or, you know, New York.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So Quinn and I we did a international trip last summer, and we were able to like keep it fairly low budget because we were in Europe, and so we did a few flights, but then it was mostly like either road trip. We did like road tripping and camping across Iceland, and then just stayed in like hostels and took the train when we were in like mainland Europe. So we only like I think we only went on like two or three flights overall, which was good, and we were able to see a lot more just sort of on the cheap. But it's definitely not easy.
Yeah. You have any plans to visit developing world?
Yeah. Not as of yet, but I went down to, so I studied abroad in Spain, Argentina, and South Africa. So I spent some time down in Cape Town and in Buenos Aires, which was really cool. And I'd love to see more of Africa and South America. Never been to Asia. Love to see the Middle East and East Asia and all that. But
you got plenty of time, dude. I mean, I'm in my 40s just now doing some of this stuff, so you got plenty of time.
Yeah.
Do you speak Spanish?
Decent. I mean, like the grammar would be pretty bad, but I can like definitely converse and get along just fine when I'm there.
It's okay. I'll be your translator.
Yeah, like being at least I did a month in Spain and a month in Argentina, and so like the being there actually like immersed I guess in the language. I wasn't taking classes in Spanish, but I was able to pick up like and improve so much more just like, you know, interacting with my host families or talking just with people on the street.
Yeah, right on. So yeah, I don't speak much Spanish at all, but I do want to definitely beef it up before I travel anywhere in South America. I don't like to travel places unless I communicate. So I'm kind of holding things off.
Yeah, my
speaking skills are better. So that's why I'm doing Senegal, because my French is okay. So I'm going to do that, and then.
Yeah, well, and I have a friend who speaks French, and he's been able to pick up some Spanish. I think, you know, they're similar enough that. It's not everything is going to be just totally starting from scratch. I feel like if you
the grammar is pretty similar. So that's the main thing. You basically form sentences the same way and you conjugate things, but some of the words are different. But you know, my dad speaks Spanish. I wish, you know, we would have been a bilingual household growing up. It would have been much more useful in hindsight. But my parents usually would. My dad would speak Spanish almost as a way to. We wouldn't know what he was talking about. So instead of it being a bilingual house.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a super helpful language to learn. I would love to learn some French. Because I think with those two, you could basically travel to a lot of the world.
Yeah, that's why I want to learn the languages that open the most doors. It'd be really cool to speak something like Finnish, but I mean, what are you going to do with Finnish? I mean, you can.
Right, yeah, one country you can do. Yeah.
So yeah, I think, you know, Spanish, French are ones that'll, especially Spanish, that'll take you through. You know, you can cover basically the entire Western Hemisphere with just English and Spanish. So it's.
Totally. Yeah, I'd love to spend some more time in Latin America. Argentina was really cool place to visit. I'll have to spend some time in Mexico, go up to Peru. There's a lot. There's definitely
Colombia.
Colombia, yeah. Definitely a lot to see.
That's really cool. You're going to be traveling though, because a lot of times you hear people, you know, the channels do well. They're, you know, they got some revenue coming in, and you know, if it's a travel geography type panel, don't take advantage of it and just kind of just do more YouTube and less, you know, less the passion. So that was really cool when I saw you did that video about how you're going to, you know, see as much of the world as you can.
Yeah. And I mean, like doing that, I've always definitely wanted to do that, but doing this has also like just built up so much more of an appreciation for it too. So, you know, if I'm talking about it, like I want to go out and see it firsthand. So I'm definitely really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I made a mistake in the video where I talked about Providence before I'd ever been there. And I said some wrong things. I was like, all right, that was my lesson learned. I'm not going to go into detail about places I haven't been to. So I just kind of got burned on that.
Yeah. I mean, I've
talked a little about Oregon.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely like, because I'm like have an order that I'm doing the States, I definitely cover some that I haven't spent time in. And they're a lot harder to write. I definitely rely a lot more on like, you know, I'll send something out to the viewers and they'll send me stuff of like what, you know, what kind of like sort of like local knowledge that I should really fit in there. But it definitely, I'm able to write like so much more authoritatively about a place where I've really spent some time. So I'm definitely looking forward to hitting the road and being able to do that a bit more.
I'm jealous of Greenland too. That's cool, man.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
Nobody goes to Greenland.
I know. Yeah, that was kind of part of it. I was like, this place has always been really interesting to me, and I'd love to get up there and like see it for myself. And there's also just there's not a lot out there in terms of just like internet research that you can do about it. It's not a place that people are really as familiar with. So it was really great to see. And we went to Nuuk, which is their biggest city, but it's also not their main tourist city at all. So it did feel a lot more like we're getting like a more real experience than, and like, I don't know how much is there an authentic experience when you're coming somewhere as a tourist, but it was cool to be somewhere that wasn't just like the main tourist town.
Did you have to fly to Europe first and then, or how do you get there?
Yeah, so they do flights from Copenhagen and Iceland are really the two spots. So we went to Iceland and we drove the whole island. So we rented a car and did the ring road for a week and camped. And then we flew from there to Nuuk. Which was, not a super long flight from Iceland to Greenland. Then we went there to Denmark and then took the train into like Germany and France.
Right on. You were in the EU in North America.
Yeah.
If they go independent, would they still be part of the EU?
It's okay. So like they're not officially in the EU as is, but they have like Greenlanders are Danish citizens, so they can go with their passport and travel throughout Europe and get all the EU benefits. But like, I don't know, like a German wouldn't be able to go and just move to Greenland if they wanted to.
The one-way door.
Yeah, but a Danish citizen could.
Okay.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of weird rules with it. Like, is it, you know, is it a country? Is it a territory? Is it a, you know, what is it?
Yeah,
that was cool. You started off your nations explained with a questionable country.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you get what do you think it's going to be, a full independence?
Yeah, I think it's definitely getting there, at least like in terms of that's what the majority of citizens want. That's what the current government wants. But the big question is really that Block grant, which is like 20% of their whole GDP. So it's a real question they're tackling with is like, how are they going to, because not like so many jobs are dependent, even more indirectly on that. So if you're going to go independent, it's just going to like sever so much of your economy. Is it worth it? So I think if they're able at some point to figure that out, then I think it's sort of a no-brainer for them. But that's what's been holding them back as of now.
A lot of the Caribbean islands, you know, they're real small population like Greenland, but when they broke off in the mid-20th century, they were all, you know, they've all gone tourism, so they've got something they can rely on. I don't know if Greenland's tourism economy is enough to keep it going. I don't know if that's a big enough sector of the economy for it to rely on.
Yeah, like they get a decent number of tourists per capita, but in terms of sheer numbers, it's real small. Like you don't really meet many people who have been there, and if they have, it's maybe they like stopped by on a cruise at some point.
Yeah.
But I mean, Iceland has gone full tourism, and I think at least being there, you sort of get a bit of the impression that they're a little, it's a little over touristed, especially if you're closer to the cities, just huge crowds. Like probably more than half the people on the island at a given time are tourists just because their population is so small.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my family, some of my in-laws went there a couple years ago or a few years ago, and, you know, they didn't go anywhere outside of just the tourist circle. So there's probably plenty of people that just do that. So I'd imagine if you get off that main, what is it, the Grand Circle or whatever it's called, you get off that, it's probably, I'd imagine, a lot fewer people. Is that the way it was?
Yeah. Like once, when you were close to Reykjavik, super crowded. And so we went like north and then east and then just down around the other way. It's like once we really got, decently like onto that like sort of north side of the island, it got pretty quiet, and we were like some of the only people we were running into. I mean, there might be like someone else here and there, but then once we sort of looped back around and started getting closer to the city again, you know, huge crowds at the waterfalls and all that.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people will just kind of go, they'll stop there for like 3 days or something, stay in the city and do some day trips out. So getting out and seeing, like, yeah, it was night and day once you're on the other side of the island. Just like, we were camping at this one place, and they have campsites everywhere. So we were just basically staying in this farm. And like the owners of the place like came out and talked to us, and they said like no one ever shows up there. Yeah. It's a beautiful place.
Of course, right now, if you follow the volcanic eruption,
yeah,
it's like it's about to go. It's crazy.
And it's like right under a city.
Yeah, it's right in the worst possible spot. I don't know if it's going to be as bad as they're saying, but they're saying it's imminent. So that means it's going to belch or something. Hopefully not a bad one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's crazy. Yeah, I've been following that a bit. They've got a lot of, I mean, they're having to evacuate an entire city. You know, where are all those people going to go? And yeah.
And that's the one disaster where there's nothing you can do but get out of the way.
Yeah. Back, like way back in the day there, I remember reading up before I went, there was this eruption that like just spewed all these toxic gases and killed like 2/3 of the whole country. I mean, they definitely deal with some crazy volcanic stuff out there.
Did you hike on any volcanoes?
We went and climbed up one. There was this area called like Lake Mivan or something. I'm definitely pronouncing it wrong. But way up like north. And there's this volcanic, this really like interesting volcanic area. With all these, there were like sort of those areas where like the gas is just like spewing out of the ground. And then they have these, there's this in the lake, there were these areas where I think, if I'm remembering correctly, these like lava bubbles would pop up and then like pop and freeze and make these really small cones just dotting the lake. But then we hiked up a smaller volcano that was nearby.
Yeah, that's cool. I've always wanted to go there. I went to Yellowstone, saw some of the, you know, great geologic features there. And in a couple of weeks, I'm actually going to, my wife and I are going to be in Dominica in the Caribbean. We're going to be doing some hiking in some of the geologic, you know, geothermal areas. So it's really cool to be able to see that.
Yeah.
Did you eat any putrefied whale blubber?
Did I eat any whale blubber? No, but I ate
fermented shark, right?
Which is maybe one of the nastiest things I've ever had.
I've heard some of that stuff is pretty awful.
It's pretty foul. It leaves this like ammonia taste in your mouth that lasts like the rest of the day. Which is pretty
tough. Was it meant to be a real delicacy, or was it meant to be kind of a joke?
I don't know. I think I don't know how much it's just like this more traditional food that they use to just mess with the tourists. But they have a lot of, it's pretty bad. And they tell you it's bad too. But.
Because where you're at, people will do that with lutefisk. Like nobody really eats it, but they'll kind of like, you want to try it? Want to see how bad it is?
I haven't had it yet. I probably should before I go, but.
It looks so, it's like a fish that jiggles like a jello mold. Looks wrong.
Yeah, Greenland has some pretty good food, though. Just a lot of like really good fresh fish and everything. Iceland was expensive, though. A lot more so than Greenland was. And I think it's just sort of a combination of they've got this like real tourist dependent economy, but they're also everything is to be shipped in. And So that's definitely something to keep in mind.
What would be your top place in the world if you could just visit somewhere? Number one country.
I would say probably New Zealand. I'd love to get out there. One of my friends studied there last year. And of course, you know, if you watch like the Lord of the Rings or anything, it's like so beautiful. And they have
such really cool.
There's a range of like geographic features and topography and climates and all that. And you can get by with English. Plus they're also just like a pretty interesting, diverse country too. But I'd also love to, being in the US, I haven't really spent much time in Canada. I was there when I was like 5. So I'd love to go see, go up north and just get to explore Canada a bit too.
Yeah, I was surprised when I was in New England, just talking to people, just how many hadn't been to Montreal. It's only like a 2-hour drive for a lot of people in northern New England. And we were in Vermont and people, I haven't been there. It's like, it's a 2-hour drive. How have you not been to Montreal at some point? But yeah, it seems it's just right there. But when you cross a border, it feels like it's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. What's on your bucket list?
I mean, New Zealand's really high on mine too. I just for all the same reasons. It's nature, the scenery, just the different the culture there. You can get by with English. So I, in terms of maybe like super exotic, I would say Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. I'd love to visit some of the premieres. I'm not sure if I'll ever get those places, but that would be high on my list.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. How about you guys, Quinn and Brett?
Also New Zealand for me.
I went to New Zealand a few years ago. Huh?
But for me, yeah. Senegal was also another one, so that's really cool that I'm getting to go there. I was
wondering
why that was one of my top, my first big exotic trip.
Going to like Norway or like Finland or Sweden would be like really cool too, I feel like.
Yeah.
I might get a chance to be in Sweden next year. We'll see.
That'd be awesome.
And my wife is taking a month or so off next summer. We're going to be in Germany, but might also go up into Denmark and Sweden. Not sure yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it's pretty easy to get to Sweden if you're in Copenhagen. I remember they had just like, I think like they might even have a train that just hopped over there. You spend a few euros and you're over there.
They have a big underwater tunnel.
Yeah.
That's always a trip. I mean, I've been there, of course, but just the one, the Chesapeake Bay one, just that whole. Oh, we're going to dive into the water. Just that. It's real trippy. I like it.
Yeah. I'd say somewhere else that's sort of like, I guess, a bucket list, like more out there would be Namibia. Like just getting to explore the Skeleton Coast and those dunes. The desert out there just seems beautiful.
Yeah, that's that's another place to be high on my list. Of course, there's almost nowhere I wouldn't want to visit. Basically, just places that are war-torn, about the only places I wouldn't go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you, I mean, like I was saying before, you got plenty of time. You got, you know, you'll be able to visit most, if not all those places.
Yeah.
It's just so expensive. I was, you know, I was pretty poor for a while, so it's just been recently I've been able to get much traveling in,
yeah,
other than road tripping in the U.S., but yeah, it's a, yeah, it's exciting just to know you got these things planned and you got trips coming up, and there'll probably be more after those.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, I'm still here, just my house is really loud.
So do you have any sort of big future plans for the channel? Where do you see it? Where do you see it going as you move forward?
I don't have any big changes planned. I'll probably just post more. Just I'm just kind of going more, a little more all in. So with more videos, there'll be some that are a little bit different, like the questions on the street. I want to make sure if I do videos like the questions on the street, or like I had a, you know, a little silly gift guide, if I'm doing stuff like that, that won't be the weekly video. It'll be something else that is the real weekly video. So I'll have more stuff that's not maybe normal type videos, but I don't think I'll be changing much. I know YouTube's changed the way they rank things, so I'm not going to let that change what I do. I know that they are recommending different type things now, so but I'm not going to change what I'm doing just to kind of get more into the recommendations, get back on their good side again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you just got to do the kinds of things that you enjoy, that inspire you, and hope that your audience, you know, supports you in that, rather than just like trying to appeal to what you think YouTube wants. Because at the end of the day, it's got to be something you're passionate about.
Yeah, that's, you can always tell the channels when it's just somebody's, whether like there's still some of those infographic channels. I wonder if that person is even interested in geography, or if they're just reading a script while looking at graphics. But yeah, you can always tell when someone's passionate and legitimate about it. And I think it makes a big difference. So I'm not going to try to force topics, just to, I think it'll, you know, do better. I told my wife, I'll jokingly put a picture of her in a bikini on a thumbnail, get some views, get some clickbait news.
Like, some people actually do that. It's like,
what? Oh, I know. There's a channel that I watch every now and then. It's a decent channel. He goes around different parts of the country. Been posting for 7 or 8 years. I went back and looked at some of his oldest videos, and he has his wife in a skimpy bikini on all the thumbnails. But then after he gained popularity, he went, you know, I'm not doing that anymore. You wouldn't even think a channel would have done that, but that's got his name out there in the first place. Or those ones with really bad Photoshop in the thumbnails, like, man, you can just, that's like Photoshop negative 101. It's so bad. Like a flying shark through a tsunami or something. It just, but clickbait still matters. I mean, YouTube still values clickbait.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, I think they've gotten better about it, but it's definitely still, it's unfortunate that that's kind of how it goes. But
I don't like how they force us to have mid-roll ads now. I was buried, you know, I was going to go down never having mid-roll ads, but then, you know, now I have to. I'm not liking that. But
they're doing their like best practices or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I doubt we'll get any more extra from it, but, you know.
Yeah.
YouTube will do pretty well from it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at least with that, hopefully some incentive for them to prioritize long-form stuff a little more. But who knows? I mean, I think the algorithm works in mysterious ways. You never really... put something out, it's a total gamble of like, you know, I've spent a lot of time on this. I've worked really hard on this, but you, at the end of the day, you have no idea how it's going to do. There's always some stuff that'll take off that really surprises you and some stuff that'll, you know, you wish it a little better, but.
Yeah. But at the same time, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't go back to 8 to 5, you know.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I can complain about YouTube, but I'm not applying for regular jobs anytime soon. So, like I said before, I'm going to ride it as long as I can. I'll need to be out in the real world with a real job at some point eventually, but, you know, probably got a little more time left with the channel.
Yeah, I mean, you got something that allows you to travel, allows you to talk about the things you're knowledgeable about and passionate about. It's like, wouldn't trade that for anything.
Yeah, having a boss matters.
Are you still growing at a pretty consistent rate, or are you sort of plateauing right now?
It really matters. Like, right now it's kind of a plateau. Back in the summer, it was growing a lot. Since they changed something in August, there hasn't been much growth, but, you know, I still wake up with at least one more subscriber than the day before. So, I mean, eventually the day will come where I wake up and there's one subscriber less than the night before. So that'll, you know, but the channel's still doing well. I think I'll probably look back and say that last year was the peak year. I mean, I don't think I'll be able to match the views of last year, but there's still plenty of growth and I'm still enjoying it. And as long as there's anybody watching, I'll still keep doing it.
Yeah. I mean, like when you're at the point where you're at like 200,000 some subscribers, I mean, you're in this area where YouTube is going to be, your stuff's going to be out there and people are going to be seeing it still. So I think also like, I mean, mine's the same way. I'll go through these periods of like, growth for a few months and then sort of stagnation for a few. But then I find like if I get something that really takes off, and for the last few months the videos I've uploaded like hadn't got too many views, you know, hopefully those new people are coming and sort of like watching some of the older ones or watching some of the newer ones, and it kind of like the growth is usually never built off of just like one new video. It's usually like one new video on a lot of older ones that sort of start to get some traction at time.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. I mean, it's one of those things, like, I can't complain, but sometimes I still do. So.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, just, I don't know. It can be frustrating, but I did see something recently how, you know, they asked people, kids in high school, what's the number one thing you could want to do? And it's, I want to be on YouTube. That was the number one. I was like, wow, really? I was like, well, so I've technically got the job that kids want. Might as well run with it.
It's like, I think when you've been doing it for, you know, a few years, like you and I have, it's easy to sort of like get used to it and forget that it's like, this is something that not a lot of people who try for it get. And it's like, at least for the first, I'd say year and a half when I had the channel, like absolutely nobody was watching it. I had like 100 subscribers. So it's like it has to be something that you're passionate about doing anyways, I think. Like, I always tell people, like, if you're going into this, like, expecting to make money, expecting to go viral, then that's not the way to do it. It's got to be a legitimate passion that you would do even if nobody was watching. Because nobody will watch it for maybe forever, like, you know.
Yeah. It's also kind of funny how some people think that channels like our size were like somehow rich. Like,
yeah.
No, I don't think so, dude. These are, you know, a lot of viewers, a lot of subscribers, but you need to have a lot of views to be rich on YouTube. I mean, I imagine you probably have a million subscribers to be probably, you know, rich on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, once you factor in like just basic costs of living expenses, it's like you're not actually taken too much that you can throw at.
YouTube doesn't have health insurance.
Right, yeah. Right, so taxes are higher and all that because you're not getting those. Your employer's not putting anything away for you, so.
Yeah, I live in one of the lowest tax states in the country, and if this is one of the few places where I could probably live on my own.
Yeah.
Without my wife's income as well. But so
yeah,
that's kind of funny. People often think you've got so much money. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's like luckily at least with my stuff, it's been pretty low budget. So it's like if I can throw it at a trip, then I can make a couple of videos from that. And I think that's really gonna, I'm not gonna be spending a ton on like these like infographics or whatever. But yeah, you know, I can buy a camera, I can buy a mic, and I can, you know, if I can pay, like save up and pay to go visit someplace, you know, and that's really just gonna improve the writing and the research, then that's the dream, I guess. But no, it's like you're not making near enough to like get some house in the hills or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, when at some point, you know, the views are going to go away, and I'm thinking, you know, I'll be 50 years old trying to get some job. They're like, what have you been doing the past 10 years? YouTube? I'm like, oh, next.
Yeah.
So really interesting to see how that's going to do as a list on your resume is what you've been doing.
Right, right. Yeah, who knows? Yeah. But I think it's like, I don't know. At the end of the day, I think we're putting out something that's valuable for people. And it's like, I don't know. There will definitely be periods when I'll feel like, you know, if the views aren't doing super great, I'll feel like a little less motivated. But then you'll see some comments from people. It's like, you know, if you've actually just like made a difference in like how one person, you know, having someone like feel a little more inspired to like see the world or learn more about it, or, you know, feel absolutely a little place they're from, like that makes it all worth it at the end of the day.
Yeah, because I'm sure it's the same for you as is me. I mean, you probably know, can just name a handful of followers that have kind of been with you for a while that have, you know, comment and just have been very supportive. So you can have 200,000 subscribers, but there's still going to be those 50 or so that, you know, are kind of like the core of the core.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Have you done, I don't know, have you done any like sort of fan meetups if you're in town? Like, I'm sort of wondering about like, is that something I should do? What I'd be doing would be like, I'd just go to a coffee shop and like work for an hour or two. But like, if people want to like swing by and say hello, I don't know if that's something you've ever done when you're on the road.
I've done that the past few times where I've done the quiz on the street. So I've a couple days before put a community post out saying I'm going to be, you know, in Chicago or Cincinnati or Omaha, the ones I've been at. I'll be here for the next few hours, and people have come down to hang out or to, you know, participate in the quiz. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It wasn't like an overwhelming thing. I think I think there was maybe 10 to 20 people at one of them. So it's, I saw something I would do in the town. I wouldn't do it here, but I would consider it on the road. So
yeah,
I think that'd be cool. I think for a lot of your viewers, they would love a chance to, you know, meet you, see what you're like in real life, see if maybe you're a serial killer in reality, you're gonna stab them or something. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. People just, you know, they want to see you in person to see if you're the person in real life that you are on camera.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know, let's see if we have any questions from the audience. Um, 5,000 people arrived at the coffee shop. I don't know if that's going to happen.
You never know.
You never know. Someone asked, what famous person would you want to meet from history or pop culture, dead, alive, or fictional?
I don't know.
I always have trouble with that question.
Probably just somebody weird. Like, what would they be thinking? Oh. I don't know.
Oh, a famous Kyle or a famous Carter? The only one I can think of is Jimmy Carter, at least. I don't know if there's too many
Kyle. thing about the name Kyle is it's a very millennial name. I'm an old Kyle. I don't know
if yeah.
most are born in the 80s and 90s. Is there a famous Kyle?
I don't know if I've like heard of too many like Kyles of history, you know?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a Carter first name.
Yeah. Carter.
I don't know. Yeah, well, there's probably a Kyle Carter somewhere out there that accomplished absolutely nothing in life, so that counts.
I know Lil Wayne and Jay-Z are both Carters.
Really?
But they're both last names, yeah. No Carter out there. A lot of Carter last names, though. Yeah, someone said all the Kyles are YouTubers or TikTok stars.
It is a very bro kind of name. parents were ahead of the game.
They were, yeah.
Because I mean, think like a 60 or 70 year old Kyle just seems kind of weird.
Right, I can't even imagine
old boomer named Kyle.
Someone's asking whether you watch Jetlag the Game. Like, is that a channel?
I don't know what that is, so no.
Oh, it looks like it's a Wendover channel.
Oh, okay.
Games where the world is our board. So maybe it's one of those, like, throw a dart at the map type thing. Yeah, I haven't heard of that either. Much better than the dart stuff. Tag across Europe, interesting.
I mean, there's a lot of good stuff out there that I'm, you know, I find new stuff all the time. I see it's been up for 5 years. I'm like, oh, just now finding out about it.
I know. There's some cool channels, some people making some real great stuff out there. It's good. Yeah, this is the first, you're the first, like, YouTuber I've had on this podcast, so I definitely want to reach out to some other people. I don't know if you like, have you talked to any other channels? Do you have any other connections with
I have. I'm actually going to be on Mr. Beat's live stream tomorrow, so it's kind of weird to have two things back to back.
That'd be awesome.
No way. I've actually
had a little bit of a difficulty getting people to want to do stuff like this. I'm not going to name names, but I was kind of surprised at just not. You kind of asked, you want to do this? I don't know, maybe. It's almost like they're kind of being polite and saying no. So I was still surprised. That was the response I got from so many people, not from a few, not a ton, but
yeah.
But maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe it's caught them on a bad day, or maybe it was just those particular people, but I haven't reached out to a whole lot more.
Yeah, I've only done like one real collaboration in terms of a video, but. Yeah, I definitely want to start. I think it would be good if there was, you know, in this sort of realm of like, you know, good informative geography history channels, you know, get a little, that's awesome that you'll be on Mr. B. He makes some great stuff.
Yeah, he's cool. I've done some stuff with him before. He's reached out to me on multiple occasions. So he's probably the only much larger YouTuber that I would feel comfortable contacting. I mean, it's kind of an unwritten rule. I'm not sure if you feel the same way, but I wouldn't contact somebody that's, you know, more than twice the size of my channel. Right. I feel kind of weird about that.
Yeah.
I don't care if people contact me, but I'd feel kind of weird about reaching out to, you know, World According to Brig or something like that, or, you know, a real big channel.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be awesome. Well, I'll definitely have to watch that when that comes out. Have you seen any stuff by City Nerd? I found his stuff a few months ago. It's It's real.
Yeah, okay. I've talked to him. That's actually the number one channel crossover for me. So, like, the number one for most of my viewers, which I found kind of interesting. We're both about the same age, kind of dry humor kind of guys, similar genre. So, yeah, I like his stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, actually. Yeah. I wonder what mine is. Channels.
Hey, it's on the, in your analytics, like the number one crossover channels.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. Because you'll probably see a couple like, really? That one?
Who's watching? Yeah, yeah.
Like some random model airplane channel or something.
Right.
Hey, guys, I hate to do this, but I have to take off. Kyle, absolutely amazing talking to you. Hopefully I can keep asking you questions in the future. I have to go to work, unfortunately.
All right, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
Yeah. Should we maybe call it now, then?
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome. Well, yeah, Kyle, it's been great talking to you. Yeah, best of luck with everything with the channel going forward. You're making a lot of really great stuff, so appreciate you being able to join. Man.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'd say that, yeah, I love your stuff too, so I think we're kind of on the same page where we're at, so I appreciate you having me on here, and I'll see if I can return the favor on my channel too.
Yeah, awesome. Reach out anytime. Thank you all who've been here watching and listening live, and yeah, we'll see you all later. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming on, Kyle. See you.
Thank you very much, guys.